Joining us now is Dan Murphy, Sportsnet host and on the Canucks and Hockey Night in Canada as well. A pretty fascinating 24 hours across the NHL, Murph. Just your initial reaction, though, of the Rangers making their move today.
Oh, man. I mean, I've got thoughts on all this stuff. The Wilson discourse is still crazy, but I don't think there's any chance this is coincidental. I mean, I know you have some insiders saying that it's performance-based and they were pulling the trigger on these guys no matter what. But if that's the case, why not do it after the next three games? And then you hear them say, well, they wanted Chris Drury to conduct Chris Drury could still have conducted the exit interviews if you fire them the day after the season. So I don't buy the fact that this is, purely coincidental. You don't light this match, especially with the game tonight, the final home game of the season, the Capitals. I find that terribly hard to believe, especially, given the owner's history of doing bat bleep crazy stuff. All right. This guy is team chaos all the way. So while it might have something to do with performance, I'd lean the other way on being the reasoning for these firings. I mean, Davidson was, been there 2 years in this role. Gorton, they started by saying they were going to do a giant rebuild. They've done a decent job so far trying to be patient. And then they're going to blow it up right now. So I don't know. I think it smells a little bit fishy from where I'm sitting at first blush anyway.
Yeah, Murph. And whether the statement was the final straw, whether Messier's in his ear because he's trying to, weasel his way into the situation. I guess it just goes to prove in any scenario, like these owners pay a lot of money for this. And whether it's sane, whether it's rational, whether it's smart, they can pretty much do whatever the hell they want when it comes to hiring and firing and getting rid of people at any time.
Yeah, and you know what? I can believe that Davidson and Gorton didn't want to, publicly ruffle the feathers of the National Hockey League. I mean, remember where Gorton comes from. He was with the Bruins, and there's some strong ties there with the league, of course, right, with head office. So I can believe they probably, if that's the case, saying, let's do this privately, not so publicly. Let's voice our displeasure with Gary over the phone, not by a statement like this. So, I can believe that part for sure, that those two would have rather dealt with this privately instead of lighting that match yesterday. But Dolan, when you look at professional sports owners, I mean, Dolan is right up there as one of the craziest, and it usually hasn't affected the Rangers as much as it's affected the Knicks, that have absolutely been a tire fire for a couple decades up until this season, basically. So you're right. I mean, it's the owner's money. It's the owner's team. But this just seems inconsistent with the direction this team had plotted and had publicly stated it was taking just a couple of years ago.
Turning it back locally, another loss last night for the Vancouver Canucks to the Edmonton Oilers, and it's tying for the longest losing streak of the season. Another six-game losing streak, which is seems hard to do in a 56-game season, but I kind of look at these last 19 games since coming back from the COVID break as not necessarily the best opportunity to judge all these players. It looks like we're judging them at the worst of times. And JT Miller was kind of the center of focus last night, slamming his stick and taking those penalties, whatnot. And it wasn't a good look, but it felt like a lot of people were jumping on him just for the sake that they wanted to direct their blame. And I would just kind of say, we're not looking at these people at the best of moments right now. It's very much, let's just get through this year, and then we can reevaluate everything. What did you make of his game last night, and is it fair to link it to his performance in general?
Well, I'd say this is twofold. I think you're absolutely correct. This is a tough time to evaluate these players. Clearly, this is something that's going to affect them mentally and physically for quite some time. You talk to some people that have, dealt with the Sabres, saying the Sabres took 4 to 6 weeks before the players felt like they were kind of back on track. So these guys aren't going to feel normal, let's say, until after the season's done. So I do think you're right in saying this is a very difficult time to try to properly evaluate players, especially guys in the bottom six that are hoping to, you know, earn jobs. As for JT Miller, I mean, I will say these things. You're never going to fault his try, right? I think the guy plays his heart out. He wears his heart on his sleeve. I just wish that, you know, it'd be different if these errors we saw last night didn't happen pre-COVID, but they did, right? So he's had some of these errors, some of these mistakes before the outbreak. And if you've got a, you know, a veteran player, one of your best players, one of the guys that play, well, the forward that plays the most, you're hoping that he can curb or curtail some of these mistakes that he's been making all season. And that wasn't the case last night. And you're giving the puck away to the absolutely worst guy, perhaps in the history of the league. And those are errors you can't make, especially when you've got a 1-0 lead and you've done an excellent job kind of at least containing McDavid and Draisaitl to that point. So it's kind of a twofold answer. I do think that COVID is going to affect this team right until the final game of the season and beyond. But I'm not going to say that some of those mistakes that Miller made last night were directly related to being mentally and physically fatigued, because it's happened before.
Yeah, but Murph, could you not argue that this whole season has been wrapped in the bow of COVID and with the problem he had at the beginning of the year? And listen, we've seen and engaged JT Miller in the postseason and how locked in he is, how smart he is with the puck, and he doesn't do these things. And hey, I can't explain why he's back passing it into the middle of the ice, but maybe the whole situation of the entire year has just been so crazy and tougher on some players more than others, perhaps?
Agreed. You know, he's been angry since day one this season, right? You know, and maybe remember we were laughing early on this season at the hot mic catching him with the F-bombs, and that was early, right? That was, I couldn't tell you exactly, but it feels to me like that was about the third week of the season that first popped up. And this is when he came back after having to quarantine for 10 days because of Jordy Benn. So there's no question. But, I mean, it's been the same for everyone. I know it was a difficult start for this team, and you know, they dug a hole early that, you know, let's be honest, they were never going to climb out of. And, you know, perhaps that this whole situation with the quarantining and the no fans and the different travel and you can't leave your hotel and all this stuff has affected JT mentally maybe a little more than some other players.
I think my main takeaway last night is, from him in particular, is he's not a center. Right? Like, I understand he can take faceoffs and all that sort of stuff, but just winning faceoffs doesn't mean you're a center. And Elias Pettersson's not great at faceoffs, but he can play center. And, like, the giveaways we've seen from him, that is part of his game, and you can get away with it a lot more on the wing. When you've got to be responsible for all this sort of stuff in the middle of the ice consistently over 82 games, I look at that moment as, like, I don't know if I trust him to play center. I know that case has been made of, in general, hey, if you want to spread the wealth out, you can go Horvat, Pettersson, Miller down the middle. In a pinch, okay. In a game, fine. Over the course of a season, I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah, fair. You know, and it, you know, as you know, we're not going to talk X's and O's as much as some people on here, but you know, clearly the centerman has some extra responsibilities, but a lot of times it's more about first man back. And the thing is, as a winger, he can still lug the puck. He can still be a playmaker. He can still initiate contact and be the guy on the line that does get as many touches as a centerman, I think. So I would agree. Having him in the 3C spot probably doesn't make a ton of sense. But now you're talking about, you know, roster construction and depth of roster and, you know, the best possible scenarios for a coach to try to win a hockey game. And I think this goes beyond JT Miller at center. I mean, I think it's Travis Green trying to make the best of perhaps a tougher, trying situation at this point.
Murph, what did you make of Jack Rathbone's NHL debut?
I thought it was good. You know, I mean, we've seen him a couple of times, not obviously in NHL game action, but I've always been super impressed with the way he skates, He's a heady defender. He can walk the line. Didn't play a ton last night, and of course sheltered a little bit, which you have to do against those top two lines of Edmonton, especially the top one right now that's loaded up. But I would say that both guys who have made their debut now in the NHL in the past week, I think Lynn's had some really nice moments. And I think that Rathbone was kind of from the very get-go at the start of the season. He was the one I was, aside from Hoglander, he was the one that I was most interested in seeing because I thought, you know, of the two guys available to the Canucks this year, we can't include Pod Coles in there, I thought those were probably the two most NHL-ready, which is kind of weird because he'd never played a pro game. But those were the two the players that I was most looking forward to seeing. And so I'm not saying it's odd that we didn't get to see him until now. Perhaps without a Hamonic signing, he might have been here a little bit earlier. But I think if you're looking forward, certainly you could probably project him playing on this team next year.
You know, with him, it just felt like there was a smoothness to his game that we maybe haven't seen from some of the other defenders, right? Jalen Chatfield puts in a lot of work, but you can see that, you know, thinking and playing at the same time. Whereas Rathbone, to me, it did feel like in the handful of minutes we saw him that there was a comfort level to him to some degree.
Yeah, as the game went on especially, right? I did think, as you would in the first period, he was looking a little bit nervous and guys are going to overthink it a bit, and that is purely understandable for anyone playing their first National Hockey League game. But as the game went on, I definitely think that. There was a couple times where he faked a shot top of the zone and moved around the forechecking forward to make a play. So I do like the way he thinks the game. I'm not going to pretend that I'm an expert on prospects. All the information I get on prospects is from the people that write the articles and post the GIFs and post the video. I try to consume as much as I can, but I think that was always a staple of his game, of being not just an offensive defenseman, but a guy who's can be a very calming presence as well, just with the way he, kind of can control the game. And, you know, all we've seen basically is at the collegiate level, except for, what, 8 games at Utica, but that's always been an impressive part of the game.
Murph, sticking with the future and prospects, Abbotsford is now penciled in as a destination for a Canucks farm team, which, you know, in all reality, probably would have happened a lot sooner had the last deal with the Flames organization not been such a political hot potato out in the Fraser Valley. You know, you're from there. There's a lot of great hockey fans in the Valley. Just your opinion on, you know, I guess not why it took so long, but how much more this will help the Canucks, having a team where you can drive a guy in an hour and be at the rink as opposed to flying him in from the East Coast that takes an entire day.
Yeah, I mean, if I remember correctly, I think you used to do some color for the old Abbotsford.
Oh, East, yeah.
If I remember.
Bringing back the glory days.
That's right. That's right. I think obviously the pros far outweigh the cons. I know some people are worried about practice time and the development of the prospects because you don't have as much because there's going to be more flights and more travel because just the proximity of the teams to Abbotsford. But I do think that, having the players close by, having them at your disposal for the most part, even if they're on the road down in California, you know, it's a little bit easier to get them up. And also, you know, I'm not going to weigh in the junior clubs in the Fraser Valley and such for this and what impact that could have. But, I mean, I think the desire to see prospects, the information about prospects, the breakdown of prospects, I think there's just so much more interest in it now. And we saw that when the Moose would come out to Abbotsford, the building would be jumping. And I think people really do want to see these guys play before they make it National Hockey level. And what better way to promote your NHL product is to have these guys playing close by so when they ultimately do make it, people are familiar with them, people know their stories, people know their games, and people can have that genuine interest. So, obviously there's going to be cons, but I think that the pros far outweigh them in this move for Vancouver to move to from Utica to Abbotsford.
Yeah, and I get all the cons, but I think what you're alluding to there is, like, for the brand, this probably makes the most sense.
Yes. Oh, totally. I think it totally does. To have him, I mean, just ask Montreal or ask Toronto, right? I mean, you have them close by. And, you know, just think that in years past when some of these guys were, even this year, if someone like Jonah Gajewicz was playing and had put up 12 goals in 15 games in the minors, you're getting people going out there to watch him, right? You would. Or Jack Rathbone that was sent down, you get people to watch him. Or Mikey DiPietro. I think most definitely that's going to be good for the brand to have those guys close by and playing and generating interest before they even make it to the NHL, which they already do. But the fact that your fans can get eyeballs on them in a live setting, it makes a huge difference.
Murph, I know when we used to do the broadcast out there, we were in the corner. There wasn't a broadcast gondola. But if there is one or they're going to put one in, I'm going to go after the Dan Murphy broadcast gondola. You heard it here first from Abbotsford. And then, hey, at Rogers, there's all those statues of Pat Quinn and Roger Nielsen. Why not a Murph Philly kind of statue out there with you, a microphone? You know, the pride of Abbotsford, MEI Eagle. Was a great bench warmer on a really good basketball team out there. So I'm going to push for that for you, Murph, so that you can get the recognition you deserve in your hometown.
Well, seeing as I moved from Abbotsford in 95, I don't think that the ties are that deep out there anymore. But maybe we can get like Hadwin and Taylor to pay for it then, right? They've got the pocket
yes.
for it.
Good idea.
So they can maybe do it. But I think there are a lot more prides of Abbotsford before you get to me. You got to go a long way down the list. But if you want to name the broadcast gondola after me, fine. Just don't make me work the games.
It is Dan Murphy on here on Vic and the Boss and Canuck Central. Murph, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And what was that story, C-Mac? Didn't they have, what was it, Jay Triano at SFU? They had something named of him at the school when he met his wife. They're not together anymore. Didn't she say that she thought Jay Triano was dead because it was a memorial thing?
yes, exactly.
I wanted to tell that story again. I had no idea who he was and thought it was Jay Triano had passed away and now they had named this after him. He was still a player. Oh, I love that story. Anyway.
We won't get them to name it for you while you're alive. We'll wait till you pass, Murph. There you go.
Tom Wilson. Name it after him. Let's go.
Oh, boy. Thanks, man.